The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
I'm delighted we're joined today by Pat Short. Pat, of course, one of Ireland's best loved comedians, but he's also starring in Martin McDonagh's A Skull in Connemara in the Olympia at present. We'll talk to you about that in a moment. Yeah. But you know, Pat, you're going to kill me for saying this, right? I actually thought you were a Limerick man, and then only realised today you're a Tipperary man.
Well, you look, my allegiance would be Tipperary. There's no doubt. I grew up there, born there, but I think 32 years in Limerick.
But does that mean then that you really want Limerick to win on Sunday?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
Because you know, the week, sometimes the way for Tip people is that to be to hell with the neighbours actually winning.
No. My kids are Limerick, and I live, and all my neighbours are Limerick. And I, to be honest with you, I love Tipperary. I came from Tipperary. I grew up, and I think people, when it gets to GA, you follow the parish you're from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No matter where. And like, I'm living in Dublin over 30 years, but I Cork all the time. It has to be Cork.
Yeah, it has to be. But then you'd probably follow Dublin if Cork were out, because you're living. No, you look at the head.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I know. I'd be a huge fondness for Limerick, massively. God, I've spent more time in Limerick than I have in Tipperary. I've grown up in Limerick. I've done everything in Limerick, and my kids are Limerick and everything else as well. So, there is that thing of, it's 1973 since they last won. And I do remember the time when they were, was it Offaly they were up against? They were nearly 7 points ahead with 6 minutes to go. And myself and John Kenny were in the Tivoli at the time. And of course, I was told to get out of the house because it was a Sunday night and the theatre doesn't open on Sunday night. And everybody from Limerick was up. And I'll never, ever forget that. That was terrible. I was sitting in a pub in Castleconnell, Limerick, and the guys all around were planning on where they'd meet the team coming off the station in the railway hotel. And as they were doing this, the game just dissolved. It was shocking. And I know John and the gang of them had left the stadium, and they were down on O'Connell Street before they realised that they had lost. They all thought they'd won. So there's a lot of hurt there in Limerick, I can tell you, down through the years.
Well, we had Joe Quaid the other night with us, who was the goalkeeper on that team.
Yeah.
In Copperface Jacks, we had a special All-Ireland night, and we'd be playing about a half an hour of it during the Last Word in Sport after 6 o'clock this evening. Are you going to the match on Sunday?
No. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a ticket.
You couldn't get a ticket?
Well, I didn't really look that hard, you know. I'd be honest with you, some ways, I'd sooner sit in the pub and watch it and get the atmosphere, you know, and put a bunch of lads and follow the commentary, etc., etc., you know.
Are you hopeful they'll win, sir? Confident?
I do think they will win. And I mean that sincerely. I think Clare opened up a lot of holes in Galway. I would have put my house on Galway at the beginning of the season. There's no question of it. And big men, great hurlers, fantastic team, the way they played over the last while. But they were shown that they are vulnerable. And I wouldn't say they're the 100% guaranteed bet going into it that people thought they were. So, it's like they say about any team, every team is beatable, and I think they are beatable, and I think Limerick are good enough to beat them.
Just before we started this interview, we were just talking about since the last time you were actually in for an interview, and you reckon it could be a decade at this stage.
It's
since
not
you
were far
last
off, I'd say.
In that decade, you have really established yourself as a serious actor.
Yeah.
Going back as far as Garage in 2007.
I'd say it was around that time, if not before that, that I was in with you. I have. I've been lucky enough. Lenny Abramson gave me a great, by casting me for that, and Mark O'Halloran for writing the part for me and putting me into it. And it was a great opportunity. And it just opened like
a... Was it a life-changing opportunity for you? There was a danger that you could have become almost stereotyped as the culty comedian to a certain extent.
Yeah, which happens to a lot of comedians and a lot of comic actors, because people don't see beyond it, you know. They don't see beyond the daftness in the character, and they don't see a lot of times that you're actually acting and performing, you know. It could well have happened. But it was a great work. I'd worked on a couple of commercials with Lenny, so previously we'd worked together, we knew each other, and he knew me. So he knew I would be right for the job, and I think that particular part was quite physical, and that's what he was looking for in it as well.
But also the fact that it was also far more constrained. I mean, normally you're the sort of character who bursts out.
Yeah.
And this was sort of like completely built in.
Which is the physical thing I'm talking about, in a sense, you know, because it's a different type of... When you say physical, some people think you're jumping around, and it's actually quite the opposite, which actually was nearly as hard. But I suppose performance-wise, in lots of ways, I suppose maybe that's what you're talking about, Matt, it was more internalised as well. But I knew I could do it. Lenny knew I could do a job on it, you know, or else you
wouldn't. But it's opened up great opportunities for you, hasn't it?
As a result,
on stage, on television, in movies. I mean, it's a different Pat Short that we've seen in the last decade in many respects.
Yeah, a lot of directors abroad look at me and they've seen Garden, they've heard of it and other jobs I've done since, and they look they look at me as a serious actor, which is quite funny, you know. You know, I won a lot of awards for Garage. It opened me up to a lot of directors. I ended up doing John Boorman's last movie. He came and see me in the West End. Michael Grandage gave me the job in the Martin McDonagh play in the West End and Broadway, out of the strength of that as well. See me in those. So it just opened me up to a whole different casting directors and that, you know, which was quite funny, you know. It's I come from the comedy background and been in comedy all the time. I'd be kind of cynical of a lot of this kind of stuff, and you end up with these kind of events. I remember being in Busan, and this is the biggest film festival in South Korea, sitting at a table with 16 other major directors and Kurosawa and I. But the funny thing about that one was I was with the head of the festival, who was with an interpreter sitting down beside me, and if it was kind of, you know, I was rocking along all right, but it was hard work, I can tell you. And I just got kind of, the reason he wanted me there was actually because I was working with Boorman at the time. I just finished doing a film with John, and they're huge fans of his out there in Asia, you know. I started talking about fishing, and it turned out the guy was a huge fisherman, fly fisherman. So we had a huge amount in common, so we didn't talk about film all night.
Are you a fly fisherman?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I've been doing that since I was a kid, yeah.
What's the attraction of that?
I find it's almost like hypnotic in the concentration. I think that's what it is. I don't know. Everyone will probably have a different opinion, but you're on your own and you're constantly focused on if you see a rise and trying to cover it in the river, and you could have a whole day pass you by and you're just casting and casting. And I find it mentally fantastic, you know.
That's interesting. My late father was an obsessive fly fisherman as well. I couldn't get it.
No, I understand that. I mean, some people don't get it. I just love, in particular, I've done a lot of salmon fishing, but in particular, I love trout fishing because it's just lighter gear and you're wading up through a river and you cover miles through a river, and it's just, and it's also been out in nature and beautiful countryside and everything else as well.
And do you think of things then for comedy sketches and stuff?
Nothing.
You just blank out.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's very refreshing in that sense. Well, because you're concentrating. You're concentrating on your cast and on watching the river and watching the change of the water and if there's a rise and if there's fish coming up and covering them. And you're looking at the flies that are around, and if you can... what flies are hatching, because you could be using the wrong fly, and you think you're using a good fly and you see some other, you're changing it out. So you're constantly watching everything that's going around. But it is very satisfying and very calming. It's almost like, I would say almost like meditation or something like that. It's just because you're in the zone and you're on your, and you're focused on what you're doing.
How often would you do it?
Not as often as I'd like to, but I do get out fishing quite a lot. But when the summer's, it depends. It depends on the summertime.
Yeah, it depends on what you're working on. For example, at the moment, you're in the Olympia in a Skull in Connemara. Tell us about this play. Is this Martin McDonagh's latest?
No, it's not. It's 20 years old, actually.
Is it?
It's part of the trilogy. People would know the trilogy, Beauty Queen of the Nan. You mentioned that. Yeah. Everybody knows of that. Yeah. Lonesome West was another one, which most people know. And then you had the Skull in Connemara, which sat in the middle of the two of them. It's funny. Like a lot of Martin's work, it hasn't dated really. You know, it's 20 years. It's 20 years old. There's a couple of little bits and pieces that you could probably say you wonder if people are going to get it or not, and they may have been written at the time referencing certain things. But on the whole, it's the storyline of the mad characters that really, really works. And of course, Martin is, as a lot of people would know, a genius in his writing in plot. He just maneuvers things in and out and. Suddenly hits you with a bombshell halfway through or something, and takes just twists and turns and everything throughout it, but great storylines as well. So the Skull in Connemara is a story about Mick Dowd, the character I play, who is a grave digger, and he's every couple of years he's brought in to dig up the graves of about 7 years gone, and to make a bit of room for the next crowd coming along. You know, this the priest asked him to do that, and of course there's an incident that happened with his wife. His wife died 7 years previous. In a car crash, but the whole village is a rumour mill. Like there's suggestions that he murdered her before he even hit the wall, and there's all sorts of things. They're vicious characters, as is with all of McDonagh's work. And this is the now turns up 7 years that he's now digging up the plot where his wife was buried. So I'll say no more than that.
To be
given away much more. But there's a local guard there, played by Pat Ryan, who's an amazing actor. People would know him from Red Rock. He's the guard who thinks he's a genius guard and the greatest detective on the planet, who's going to he's going to nail him for once and for all. There's Maria McDermott-Rose playing the female character I think of now in a second. I'm doing this every night, Mary Johnny, and she's the rumour mill. She's a wonderful old kind of West of Ireland spinster type character, and she's just brilliant at her performance and comedy. And then Gerard Tivenin is playing the young fella, and he's just got so much energy. And I often think that Gerard's character is almost the lead in it, because he's the guy that brings the stories, the news and the bombshells, and drops them all.
Are you doing much comedy these days?
Yeah, doing a lot, actually. I just finished a tour called How's Things, and I'm writing a new live show, which is called Hey, and it's going to be opening in November, probably. I'm just still in the process of writing and putting it together. Once I finish in the Olympia, I'll be going into the studio in Limerick and just ploughing ahead until we get it on the road.
What's the bug about getting back and performing live comedy on stage? Because... Oh, at least when you're in a play like this, you're working with a director and with a cast, and you're working to a script that's provided. When you go back and do live comedy, it's very much your own stuff. Are you not more exposed when you go to that?
Yeah, you are. I think that's the drug of it, in a sense, the excitement of it. It's what I started doing, Matt. You know, I kind of grew up in the world of theatre with John Kenny doing... comedy characters. I wouldn't say stand up as such, and I suppose what you try to do then, since I went out my own like nearly 20 years ago now, you develop and find your own niche and character, and working with an audience and getting a reaction from the audience, and you got to keep reinventing yourself and coming up with something new.
We have some clips to play from the past. Can you believe we have a bit of Dumbelievables? Put on the headphones there and listen to a bit of yourself and Crime Stoppers.
Oh God.
Oh good. Crime Busters.
Hello there, and welcome to Crime Busters.
Hello, and welcome to Crime Busters.
Now, we have a lot on the agenda, lads, so we'll cut the chase and get straight down to the business. What's first on the agenda there, PJ?
First on the agenda there, Tom, is a robbery. A robbery, Tom.
A robbery. Now, we had a robbery, lads, only last week down the village. It was last Friday night. They came in through a side window at the house, approximately 3 a.m. They proceeded to clean out the kitchen, the sitting room, and leave via the front door. Now, can you tell me what's wrong with that? The window was feckin' wide open, lads. Jeez, you can't do that. You can't go to bed and leave a window open or door up. We're blue in the face and tell you that when you lock up before you go to bed.
That's right, lads.
You're only wasting our time and your time. And you come down to us then crying.
Oh, spilt milk.
Oh, spilt milk then, yeah. Where is it? Where can I get my stuff back? Where have they gone? So how are we supposed to know? What can we do with our time, lads? You just can't be doing that. You can't walk away and leave a house open and expect nothing to be done. You might as well open the front door and let him in.
You might as well meet here for.
Exactly, good man. So you've been taught enough, lads. Now you got two walls, so let that be it. We say no more.
You know, I think actually probably a lot of people who have had their house broken into have had a similar experience with the garden.
Conversation.
It's your own fault. What do you think? Expect us to do about it?
That was funny. It's funny hearing that piece, actually, because that was back in 1998 when I first did a Martin McDonagh play with Drew Theatre Company, strangely enough, because I remember we did it on The Late Late Show. They were mad for us to do that part, piece on The Late Late, to promote the video.
Yeah.
And we had beards, the two of us, because we were in the play, myself and John at the time. We were very reluctant to go on with the beards. Anyway, I don't know why. But anyway. So it's interesting you play that piece.
I'm going to play another piece. This is Community Radio for Killing the Scully.
And our first request is from Noni Goggins, who's seriously 111. Well done, Noni. And I'll tell you something, Noni. If I was 111, I'd take it seriously too. So we're going to play a request for you, Nolly. This is Cliff Richard, and congratulations.
Then the other speed.
Well done, Dan. We're well and truly launched now, huh?
Do you want me to do a jingle for you, Dan?
No, thanks, Nolly. I've just received a note from my assistant to say that Nolly Goggins is not... seriously 111. She is in fact seriously ill, and as it happens, her family are travelling to be by her bedside as we speak. We'd like to send our apologies out to Noni and all concerned from all here at KCR, and we'd like to play this request for you now, Noni, a tune by Roger Whittaker called The Last Farewell.
You unadulterated loser. In future, when you're writing a note, make sure someone can be able to read it.
I hope that never happened to you.
Yeah, well, have you ever been Killing the Scully back?
I don't know. It was a different time in television, kind of. You know what I mean? it was great characters in that, but it was a big production, to be fair to RTÉ at the time. They put a lot into it, and I just think those budgets aren't there anymore, and the whole television has changed an awful lot since that time, as you know. All media has changed, because that was kind of pre the internet and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was there, but it was pre the YouTubes and all that kind of carry on, you know. So very different times.
You will be back in RTÉ, though, I believe, as part of Who Do You Think You Are?
Yes,
Have you recorded that yet?
Yeah, done and dusted. I can't talk about it.
You're not allowed to talk about it.
Of course not. I mean, because it's... what I can say about it is it was a shock to me. When the company approached me to do it, they asked me would I do it, and I said, if someone asked you, imagine, yeah, if you find something, fair enough, like, you know, but I honestly thought they wouldn't find anything at all.
And did they found a large skeleton rattling around somewhere?
They found two or three of them, but they found one in particular, yeah. There's about two or three different stories they found, and we spent a week filming it, and I ended up going abroad a bit and over to places like that. And that, you know, it was all interesting and fantastic. But then the last 2 days was just knocked the socks off me completely and everybody in the family.
Jeez, you're teeing that up nicely now, aren't you?
And it did. It genuinely did. Now, I have to say, I do know the production company are very happy with it, and I think they were absolutely blown away themselves. So it was a very, very interesting story, and I can't say any more than that. I genuinely couldn't, because it would ruin it for people watching. I mean, and the nature of the program, as people would know from watching this, it unfolds as the program goes on, and it very much, I knew absolutely nothing about it, and they really kept it from me until it hit you towards the end. Yeah, it was. I think I said in one of the papers it was explosive, and I do believe it was a shocker, you know.
Okay, look forward. When's that coming out? Have they told you?
No, they haven't told me. I think it's coming out in the autumn schedule at some stage. And I think they're putting it out as either the first or second episode or something like that in the series. So it's whenever it's going out.
Okay. Listen, one thing to finish up. I mean, you are coming back, you say, with a new show later in the year. You're going back in comedy. Will you have to sing Jumbo Breakfast Roll? Is that still something that your fans demand of you?
It is. I'm hoping...
That was the ultimate Celtic Tiger song in some respects, was it?
Yeah. It was the zeitgeist of the era. It was mad. I mean, it was a character I did, a builder character in a show. And to promote the show, I was asked to go on the Late Late Show. And I said I'd sing the Breakfast Roll. I remember my accountant at the time, it was a lovely guy. He says, don't do that. It's a really good song. Save it for the show. And I said, no, look, I'll do it on the Late Late Show. And I went on the Late Late with it, and it just went viral before viral existed. A couple of DJs started saying they want, Sony approached me, we recorded and we got it out there. And it became one of the, if not the biggest, one of the top two biggest singles of all time.
Let's remind ourselves of it.
Too rash, too big, and too put my black and white. Half deck like a terror on top of each other in round up good and tight. If you're having some tea, the milk's off, or do you find sugar in the bone? Says she, do you want some sauce and that? Says, are you doing my roll?
I suppose if you just slowed it down with an acoustic guitar, it could be Christy Moore.
I could. No, I dropped it from a show about 5 years ago, and jeez, the crowd went mad, and we're all saying, "Why isn't he playing that?" We felt short, so I had to put it back into the show. So I think we're nearly at the stage now where I can.
But it definitely doesn't feature in a Skull and Connemara,
no,
which is out of the Olympia until the 1st of September. Pat Short, it's been great seeing you again.
You too, thanks,
and
Matt.
We won't take as long the next time. All right, thanks very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.